Michiamo apura kanu apurai tight nut and ne akanfo nanasom da medinde ojirapo kwesi radnehem pata akan akwamumai na maruka tipimu ojirapo. That means greetings to all apura kani apurai tight nut people, meaning African black people. Today is akanfo nanasom day. My name is ojirapo kwesi Rod Nehempata Akan, Ojirapo of the Akwamu Nation in North America. We want to say, Yerase, we thank you for tuning in to the show. Couple of announcements real quick for some of the new members. First of all, this is a new show, so we have three shows, weekly broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. We have this Akanfo Nanasom, ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion, every Joada, every Monday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have Ojira, Purification. We have that show on Benada or Abenada Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as well. And we also have Hegwa Marketplace, which is on Awukuda or Akuada, which is Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as well. So these are three different shows. The Egua, of course, Marketplace show deals with, we introduce Afurakani, Afurakaitni, or African businesses, products and services. We interview people who own their own businesses or produce a product or render a service to the Afurakani, Afurakaitni community. People who are here to uplift the community, empower our community, but also those who share our ancestral values. So we've interviewed a number of different people, put forward and shown some light on their products and services to inform the community. For the Ojira show, Purification, we deal with Afurakani, Afurakaitni ancestral religion. We examine different aspects of the culture, how it's relevant to us today, and of course, as we always say, Ojira, or purification, operationalizes Nanasom, operationalizes Afurakani, Afurakaitni, or African ancestral religion. So we go into a number of different topics. We've went into the nature and function of specific deities, specific texts from ancient Kemet and Kanit, Nubian Kemet. We've gone into a number of different topics, and all of the shows are archived. For this particular show, Akanfo Nanasom, today is the first day of this show, and it's going to be ongoing, as we said. We wanted to deal specifically, and we will be dealing specifically with Akanfo Nanasom. Nanasom, of course, is our term for Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, meaning African ancestral religion. In essence, Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, ancestral religion, is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. So through ritual, we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And through ritual, we restore balance to ourselves when imbalance occurs. We learn to repel and reject those things, objects, deeds, or entities that would otherwise, if we did not reject them, will place us or keep us out of harmony with divine order. So the ritual incorporation of divine law, the ritual restoration of divine balance, that's what Afurakani, Afurakaitni, ancestral religion or Nanasom is. No matter what form or expression it takes, it's fundamentally the same practice. We have different forms or expressions of Nanasom, whether it be Akan or Yoruba, Igbo, Ebe, Fong, Fang, Fula, Bakango, Bambara, Minianka, Gurumachi, Nguni, various different groups, but fundamentally the same culture is practiced by all. We just have varied expressions of the same culture. The culture is rooted in the proper understanding of cosmology, divine order, which is comprised of Maranechi, divine law, and divine hate. Divine order is the divine acceptance or law or love of order and divine rejection of disorder. This is what our culture is. And divine order is comprised of the expansive pole and a contractive pole. And we're going to get into detail about that. The expansive pole of order is law, which is the same concept as love in our traditional culture, ancestral culture. And the contractive pole of order is divine hate. And we're going to get into that because these are some of the things that we have to ferret out, some of the things that we have to expose, some of the things we have to explicate because of the misinformation that's being promoted, of course, by our absolute enemies, the whites and their offspring, but also those black people who embrace the misinformation of the whites and their offspring and propagate it as though it is traditional and ancestral culture, which it is not. So Ojida deals with that. Our Ojida show, we go into detail exposing these various things. With the Akanko Nanasom show broadcast, what we are going to do is specifically focus on Akan, ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion. So that's the purpose of this show. Of course, we will show connections with that, with the various other expressions of our ancestral culture, but we're going to focus specifically on that. There is no broadcast that we know of that deals with specifically Akanpo Nanasom, our ancient authentic Akan ancestral religion, where it's being taught, taught just in general, and of course taught properly. So we're going to get into that, and that's the purpose of this show. For those who are in the chat room, you have to, if you want to make a comment or you have a question, of course you have to log in. For those who are on the phone lines, if you have a question or you want to make a comment, then just hit the number one so we can see that your hand is raised and we can, you know, call on you. So first we want to, if you put, look on the in the chat room for those who are in the chat room, and for those who are on the phone line, if you go to the Akanpo Nanasom page, I'm going to put that in the chat room now. Akanpo Nanasom page, we have, of course, an introduction. The introduction is also in the form of a PDF document as well that's also on the page. So when you look through the introduction, we're going to get into some of that information or get into that information, but also you can download it as a PDF. And then on that page, there are many articles mixed with the books as well as the articles. We have over 60 articles, 15 books, and 48 videos right now. Most of them are about 2 hours where we go into detail about where we examine the information in our articles. So the various links specifically dealing with Akanpo Nanasom and some other information you'll find on the Akanpo Nanasom page. For those who are on the phone line, it's ojidafo.com/Akanpo, A-K-A-N-F-O underscore Nanasom, N-A-N-A-S-O-M dot HTML. So when you go to that page, you'll see the links to the various articles and some of the articles that we're going to deal with today. The first one, of course, being the specific, we're pulling it up right now. I'll put the link in the chat room. Okay, so that the particular article is Akan, the people of Kanit, Akan land, ancient Nubia, Sudan. So I'm going to put the link in the chat room, and people can check that out. You can pull that up. So that particular article, and then we're off the Akanpo Nanasom page in the introduction in general. And we're also going to get into note on the origin of the name Nyame in ancient Kemet, in ancient Kanit and Kemet. I'll put the link to that one as well in the chat room. All right. Okay, so those three, but all the articles that we're going to be dealing with today can be found on the Akanpo Nanasom page. So Akanpo, a.k.a. A-K-A-N-F-O underscore Nanasom, N-A-N-A-S-O-M dot H-T-M-L on the ojidafo.com site. So, first of all, let's deal with, we're going to deal with the title, the name, why we call this Akanpo Nanasom, and we're going to get into some truthery and distinguish what we're doing, which is different than other groups, so people can have an understanding. Akan is, of course, the people, the ethnic group. We're going to get into the origins of the Akan people, but Akan just means Akan people. The suffix "fol" in the Chi or the Akan language denotes a group of people. So you have an Akan person is Akani, Akan people is Akanfo. Just like you can have Obibini, Obibi, or Obibdi means a black individual. Obibini means a black person. Ibibifo means black people. Akani means Akan individual. Akanfo means Akan people, Akan folk, so to say. Nanason, that is the term that we have coined to designate Apurakani, Apuraikaini ancestral religion. So, and what we're talking about when we use Akanfo Nanason, ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion. So first let's talk about the Akan people, the origins, and then we're going to get into the specifics. Akan people today make up about 45% or more of the population of Ghana, about 42 or more percent of the population of Ivory Coast. So there are about 11 million Akanfo in Ghana and about 9 million Akanfo in Ivory Coast or Cote d'Ivoire. So there's about 20 million plus Akanfo, Akan people in Apuraka, Apuraikai, or Africa. And of course, one of our publications, we mentioned we have 15 publications. One of the publications that we have, one of the books that we publish, is Apuraka, Apuraikai, the origin of the term Africa. So this, of course, we use the term. We prove in that book that the term Apuraka was corrupted into Afrika or Africa, but it comes from our ancient language. It doesn't come from the Romans, the Greeks, Sanskrit, Phoenician, so-called Hebrew, none of these other languages. It comes directly from our ancient languages in ancient Kanat and Kemet, ancient Nubian, Egypt, and we show in the Medusa, in the hieroglyphics, the actual term in proper context. We also show the cosmology that gives birth to the term. Apuraka, Apuraikaet, the male and female versions of the term designating the Ka, the high land or the raised land, the original land of Apura, the creator. Apuraka is the land of the creator. And Apurayat Kaet is the land Kaet of Apurayat, the creatress. So the creator and creatress is Ra and Raet, their most ancient names in our languages. One of the titles of Ra and Raet as creator and creatress is Apura and Apurayat. So when Apura moves through the first landmass, the first Ka, the first high land that rose up out of the primordial ocean, it is the Ka of Apura or Apuraka, the land of the creator. And Raet moves through the first Kaet, the feminine aspect of that first raised land that rose up from the primordial ocean to be the first landmass of Earth. When that creatress, when the spirit of Raet, the creatress, animates that landmass, it becomes the Kaet of Apuraet or Apuraet Kaet. So Apuraka, Apuraikaet is the original title. And of course, the book goes into detail about that, and we're going to talk about the books later on in the broadcast, how you can obtain them directly from the website, the ebook versions as well as the soft cover versions. And for those who would like to distribute the books and sell the books and generate additional income for yourself as an entrepreneur, we have a program for that as well. Very simple. You just order wholesale and sell them retail. So we're going to get into that a little bit later. So in Apuraka, Apuraikai, Ghana, Ivory Coast, one of the largest ethnic groups in the western part of the continent and just across the continent in general are the Akan people, about 20 million plus people. Now, of course, because they're one of the largest ethnic groups in the western part of the continent of Apuraka, Apuraikai, during the Musuo Kesie, which is the tree term that we use for, which means the great perversity, which is the enslavement era. Musuo means evil, great evil, perversity, negative, terrible, you know, disaster, and Kessie means great. So Musuo Kessie means the great disaster, the great perversity, the great evil, the great criminal perverse happening. So that's our description for that in tree language. During that process, of course, one of the largest groups, the Akan people, many people from the Akan ethnic group were drawn, taken from West Afuraka, Afuraikai, to North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the enslavement process. This is why one of the largest groups in the Western Hemisphere, when people trace their ancestry, whether they do it through genetic tests or they learn directly from their ancestresses and ancestors or through genealogy, whatever method you use, one of the largest groups is the Akan ethnic group. In fact, the Akan, the Yoruba, the Ebe, the Fon, Igbo, Bakango, Mende-speaking people, these major groups are the largest ethnic groups from which most of our people were taken from West and Central Afuraka, Afuraikai, and brought into the Western Hemisphere during the Musuo Kessie. So this is why when people are reconnecting with their culture, very often large groups of people would be drawn to these major ethnic groups and the culture and the language and the ritual practices, because that's exactly who they are. It's not to the exclusion of any other groups. People can find out exactly what group they come from, whether it's one of the larger groups or a very small group. But we're going to get into that as well. But the Akan was one of the largest groups, and many of us in the Western Hemisphere are actually okay, so it looks like something happened with the system with Blog Talk, and it kicked us off. So if somebody in the chat room, can you send a message, let us know that you can, that we're back on the air. Can you hear us? Just anybody in the chat room, just send a message, let us know you can hear. Sometimes Blog Talk, every now and then, okay, you can hear now, good. Every now and then Blog Talk does that in different broadcasts. You'll see if people who listen to Blog Talk, they know that every now and then something happens with the system and it kicks people off depending on what's going on with their system. But so we're talking about the Akan people being from, you know, a large percentage of our people taken from that group brought into the Western Hemisphere. However, if we go back prior to that, we're going to deal with the migrations. We're going to deal with the origins of the term. When we talk to our Nanano Mpanyimpo, which are the honorable elders and elderesses in the culture, and the Nanano Nsamampo, the ancestresses and ancestors, and ask, what is the origin of the name Akan? Why do we refer to ourselves as Akan? And they have always said and continue to say that the name comes from two roots. Khan in the tree language meaning first or foremost, meaning as our Khan people were a component part of the first people to exist in the world. The second meaning of Khan is to calculate, to count, to reckon, so that we identify ourselves with that because we're a component part of the first people to calculate or reckon, meaning the first people to engage the process of civilization. When you can calculate, when you can reckon, when you can measure time, measure the seasons, the movements of animal life, the unfolding of plant life and so forth, and you can establish your civilization rooted in those ecological cycles and everything else, now you're calculating, you're measuring, you're making decisions, you're dealing with equations for a streamlined society. So you start structuring your activities, individual, social, and communal, based on the divine order that you see in the created universe. So a civilization is a social order patterned after the divine order in creation, in nature. And when you can calculate and measure and reckon, and then you can reestablish what you have calculated, what you've measured, properly and replicate that in your society, now you have a civilization. So the Khan meaning first or foremost, and kan meaning to calculate, to count, to reckon. The first people, a component part of the first people to exist, and a component part of the first people to engage the process of calculation, deliberation, study, examination, and so forth. So those are the two roots, and this is why the Nananong Mpanyipo, the elders and elderesses who are spiritually cultivated, and the Nananong Nsamanfo, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, they teach us this is why we use this term. Now, when we go back to the language of ancient Kemet and Knesset, ancient Egypt and Nubia, what we will find is that the exact same terms with the exact same meaning exist in the language, because we actually began in that region and then we migrated west, central, and south, and so forth, and reestablished our civilization. If we look linguistically, we can find that and prove that. We can also look genetically. We can also look culturally. We can also look spiritually. Linguistically, when you look at the language of ancient Kemet, you'll find that the term kan means first, foremost, from the beginning, and when it's designating a land, a specific land, a specific country, the land is called Kanat or Kanit, the Kanit land or Kanat. That is a title, an ancient title for what Europeans later corrupted into Nubia. Coming from Nubia, actually comes from Nub, meaning gold, and Nubit. Talking about a certain southern region of Kemet, and prior to those borders, that southern land. So the term Nubia is just a corruption of Nubit, which is an ancient title. But one of the most ancient titles is Kanat, or the Kanit land, from the root Kan, meaning first, foremost, from the beginning. The south land, the land of the beginning, the land of the ancestresses and ancestors, the Kanat or Kanit land. So not only does it designate first or foremost or from the beginning, just like Kan in the tree or the Akan language, also called the tree language, means first or foremost, but actually the landmass is designated as that Kana or the Kanit land, and the people themselves, instead of saying Nubians, they would say Kanit or Kaniti or Kanitu, plural, meaning the Kanit people, the first people, foremost people, people from the beginning, people from the south, people from the first land or the front land, the land of the beginning. And for us, and even in ancient Kemet, when they took their bearings, they were focused south, just like the Europeans focus north and make north the top, the head of the compass, and they gained their bearings by focusing on the north direction. Well, in ancient Kemet, they used south as the direction by which they gained their bearings. This is why the term for west, amit, is also the term for the direction right. And the term for east, aptet, is also the term for the direction left. The only way right can be the same as west and left can be the same as east is if you're facing south. If you turn to face south, when you point to the right, you're also pointing west. When you point to the left, you're also pointing east. This is why in ancient Kemet, the term for right and west is the same word. The term for left and east are the same word because we gained our bearings by looking south. The front land, the south land, the land of the beginnings, the land of the ancestresses and ancestors, Kanat, or the Kanit land, and the people are called Kanit people, Kanitu, or Kanatu. The land is named that, the people are named that. Even in Akan language today, when somebody says, I am Akan, we would say, Meye Akani, meaning Akan individual, Akani, just like we said, Akan fo is Akan people. So just like we say, Akani, to be Akan, Meye Akani, I am Akan, we're saying exactly what we said in ancient Kanat, or the Kanit land. We called ourselves Kanit, the first people, foremost. The second meaning in ancient Kemet and Kanat, of course, for the root Kan, the first meaning is from the south, from the beginning, the front land, the first, foremost, from the beginning. The second meaning for Kan is to count, or to reckon, to calculate. So the exact same two meanings in the tree language of the Akan people today are the exact same meaning to count and to reckon, and also the first and foremost are the same meaning in ancient Kanat, in ancient Kemet, and so forth. It's because we are the exact same people. We called ourselves Kanit people back then. We called the land the Kanit land or Kanat back then. We also called it the first, foremost land, the people who count or reckon, calculate, and so forth. When we migrated west and eventually ended up in the western part of the continent, we reestablished the ancient Kanat Empire after the invasions of ancient Kemet of the Assyrians and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans and the Arabs. Eventually, over a couple of thousand years ago, some of our people migrated west. Some remained where they were in what is now the Sudan and eventually South Sudan, and they still exist there right now. And some of our people migrated west, and we migrated through Chad and migrated Dave's Chad and migrated all the way over into the western part of the continent. We first established what will later become the Kanat Empire in southeastern Mauritania, western Mali of the region today, the ancient empire Kanat. Some of the Arabs and others will say that just means a master soldier, warrior king. In reality, the empire Kanat is the ancient empire of Kanat, the same Akan or Akana empire that we established in Kanat or Nubia, we established in the west as Kanat. We established that empire. We lived there for hundreds of years, of course. We established civilization. Then hundreds of years later, actually over 1,000 years later, there were invasions from the east, from black people who were brainwashed with the pseudo-false religion of Islam, sometimes also in connection with the white Arabs, together invading. So the Muslim invasion came to the western part of the continent. Some of our people, the intelligent of our people, did not embrace that nonsense. When some of the disgruntled in the society wanted to ally with the enemy to go against those who they were disgruntled with, then that causes a fracturing in the society. It was an opportunistic move, but that was caused a fracturing in the society. And once we fractured, then some of our people decided we saw the neighborhood deteriorating, so we moved away from the neighborhood. We weren't going to participate in the nonsense when we saw some of our people embracing self-destructive, ignorant, pseudo-religious practices and foolish culture. So some of our people migrated away, migrated south towards the forest belt through what is now Burkina Faso, northeastern Cote d'Ivoire, northwestern Ghana of today, of the border today, and eventually settling in the savannah and then forest belt regions and eventually getting all the way to the coast, where the coast is now, Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. So we migrated away from the ancient Akana Empire or Ghana Empire, reestablished Akana civilization, Akan civilization, in the savannah and forest belt region of today's Ghana and Ivory Coast. That was about 1,000 years ago. So we reestablished the culture, reestablished civilization, and continued to do what we were doing. Then a few hundred years after that, which is a few hundred years ago, Europeans began to settle on the coast, establish forts on the coast. They attempted to invade. They attempted to enslave. They typically were not strong enough militarily to defeat any of those western west coast nations of Afuraka. So what they had to do was wait to see when our people were fighting against one another, when we were engaged in civil war, when we were engaged in internecine warfare, and they would foment, you know, hostilities on both sides. They would sometimes arm one side and arm the other side, or ally with one side, the weaker side against the stronger side, and then switch sides and ally with the stronger side against the weaker side. And in that way, they began to foment these disturbances, this discord. Now, some of our people, when there were wars being waged civil wars of somebody, one nation attacks another nation, one Akan nation, for example, attacks another. Very often, some of our people have been infected with Islam to a certain extent, and now they're trying to force that on the traditional people. Then there's an internecine warfare. There's civil war in that particular instance. When you capture a prisoner of war, or you capture and imprison a convicted felon, you have two options. You can either enslave them or imprison them, keep them in prison, or you can kill them. But if somebody was part of an army who rushed your village, set your village on fire, started killing people, and you captured them, you can either kill them or you can imprison them. But you're not going to let them go and go back and rejoin with their army so they can come back to you. So those were the two major options that we typically had. When the whites and their offspring showed up, now a third option appeared in the minds of some of our people. Instead of killing the prisoner of war, or instead of imprisoning the prisoner of war, now the whites and their offspring said, well, we will purchase them. We will trade. We will give you guns, give you ammunition, give you other things, and if you give them to us. Some of our people, if they were convicted felons, they would do that and go ahead and sell the convicted felons. If it was a rapist, a murderer, you know, somebody who was torturing people or whatever, they would sell them to the whites and their offspring because they figured they would torture them as well, and they might as well get paid for that. Some of the other ones, with prisoners of war, they did the same thing. Now, some of our people were intelligent enough to realize that we shouldn't be bargaining with the whites and their offspring at all because they're spirits of disorder. But some of our people felt, and rightly so, they felt that the whites and their offspring in and of themselves were inferior to us, and they couldn't imagine them ever dominating us in any fashion. They had been around them or in some interaction with them for centuries, and they had never seen any whites dominate any blacks anywhere. They couldn't recall that for centuries. So they saw them as inferior, albino-type individuals, and they weren't worried about them at all. But the intelligent amongst us recognize that even the smallest entity, you can have a mosquito, but if it carries a virus, then that can infect you and that can take the larger individual down. If you don't know, if you're not paying attention, if you're not focused. If you're focused, you can crush the mosquito easily. But if you're not focused, if you're not paying attention, the weaker one can affect the stronger one. So some of our people were intelligent enough to recognize that they didn't deal with the whites and their offspring at all. Some of the other ones who were less intelligent, less mature, dealt with the whites and their offspring. They sold the prisoners of war and the convicted felons to the whites and their offspring in exchange for ammunition, guns, and so forth. We were manufacturing our own guns, but we weren't manufacturing them as fast enough and had as much people, as much manpower dealing with that as the whites and their offspring did. We introduced the quote-unquote firing stick, which later became the rifle, to the whites and their offspring hundreds of years prior to that. Black people who had went up into southern Europe, some of the black people who pejoratively were called Moors by the whites and their offspring. Moor actually means dead, means slave, means wretched, it means afflicted. And we have a book dealing with that, Moor Means Dead, where we give the actual etymology and prove that. So, but they use that terminology as a pejorative title for black people in general. And some of our people took that title on in ignorance. So some of our people who went up into Spain and southern Europe and dominated the whites and their offspring in the quote-unquote Moorish era, we introduced the firing stick, or the what would later be called the gun, to the whites and their offspring. The whites and their offspring were, once they got that technology, they began to spend a great deal of time manufacturing guns. That was the best technology that they had. Prior to that, they were wearing body armor, they had swords, they had lances, they had other kinds of, you know, weapons of warfare, and that was it. Once they got the firing stick, then they felt like they had a new lease on life, per se, and they spent a great deal of time dealing with that. On the continent, we had the firing stick. We knew how to manufacture that in the Akan tradition. like the Asante Warriors, for example. They were manufacturing rifles, but that wasn't our number one means of warfare. We had swords, of course. We had spears, but we also had chemical and biological warfare. We had that with regard to utilizing those war medicines. We also even, when we talked about arrow, you know, poison-tipped spears and things like that, we were talking about chemical and biological warfare attached to our weapons of warfare. So when you strike somebody, it doesn't just poison them and they get sick. It gives them a virus that can spread throughout the entire camp, the entire army, the entire host, and take out a large percentage of the army. So we were engaged in that kind of warfare, and we didn't spend as much time, as much manpower manufacturing guns. So because the whites and offspring came and they had spent that much more time dealing with that, some of our people were like, well, we can, since they have more guns than we do, we can trade our convicted felons, prisoners of war, to the whites and their offspring, and the whites and their offspring would in turn give us ammunition that we could use to wage war against any other threat. Some of the immature amongst our people engaged that process. Those who were intelligent didn't barter or exchange with the whites and their offspring at all. So all these different things are happening, and some of our people get snatched up and, of course, taken to North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the enslavement process, and this is how we ended up in the Western Hemisphere. Now, that's a true historical, we're talking about a migratory pattern. We show linguistically the name of the people, the name, the concept, the definition, and where we got the name from in ancient Kanat, and we still maintain that exact same name with the exact same definitions and designations today. That's linguistic. We show a migratory pattern as far as what happened true historically. Genetically, they have done DNA tests, for example, on Ramesu III, so-called Ramses III. They've done DNA tests on Tutankhamen, so-called King Tut, misnomer. And they've shown that these two sovereigns in ancient Kemet have the haplogroup, which is designated as E1B1A, which clusters at its greatest frequency in the western part of the continent of Afurakai, that Y chromosomal haplogroup, upwards of 80%, and then with black people in America, 50 to 75% of all black people in America carry that same Y chromosomal haplogroup. So what that's showing is from ancient Kemet, that same migratory pattern directly across to West Afurakai, that same genetic imprint exists within 80+% of the people. And then from West Afurakai, North America, 50 to 75% of black people in North America carry the same genetic marker, the same Y chromosomal haplogroup, E1B1A. So we showed genetically, that just confirms, of course, and just reiterates basically what we know happened culturally, historically with the migratory pattern. What happened linguistically is the same pattern. And then we show, of course, through our Akan Nanasom, Akan people worship the same deities by the same names, with the same functions in creation, the same ritual colors that we did in ancient Kemet. They still exist in the Akan tradition today. And we, of course, we carry them with us in our Kra Nemoja, in our soul and blood, to the Western Hemisphere with us. And we continue to practice the ancestral religion that came directly from Kanat, ancient Nubia, into Kemet, of course, into the Western and Central and other parts of Afurakai. And even when we got to the Western Hemisphere, we continued these practices in different forms, taking on different names. In South America, for example, in Suriname, the Akan tradition is called Winti. In Jamaica, they will call the tradition sometimes Obia, and the Akan were culturally dominant. In Jamaica, for example, the Maroon Society, culturally dominated by the Akan, although there were many different ethnic groups as part of the society. In North America, in the southern United States, southeastern United States, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Louisiana, North Carolina, South Carolina, into the Gullah Geechee cultures and so forth. We have the practice hoodoo, which is actually an Akan name. And we have an article, The Akan Origin of the Term Hoodoo. So we still, and when you look into the practices, these are the same practices that we carry spirit genetically in our craft, in our souls, our divine consciousness, in our blood. Our ancestresses and ancestors, the Nananom and Samapo, never left us when we crossed Epo Abena, the Abosom, the ocean, and Bosom Po. The Abosom, the divinities, did not disconnect from us when we migrated across and were forced to migrate across the great water. So we still have the tradition in our blood, in our crop. So we're showing these migrations, linguistic and so forth, to show that we are the exact same people with the exact same name, unbroken for thousands of years. Now, when you look on the page, Akampo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestry Religion on the website. For those who just got back on, that's what we're looking at now. So we start off talking about that, talking about the true story in that article. We talked about Akanfo, so let's talk about briefly the term Nanasom, so we can have a clear understanding. The term Nana in the Akan language or the tree language means that's a term designated for an elder at the highest office in society, an elder or an elderess. It carries the greatest weight. It deals with someone who lives in harmony and every thought, every intention, every action, they harmonize with divine order. They're living in complete harmony with divine order. They've reached that level of spiritual maturity where every thought, intention, and action is a reflection of divine order. And when they can harmonize in that capacity, then they become a model to emulate, and they grow into and earn that title, Nana. Nana is from the root Na. It means precious. It means great. It means rare. Nana is the reduplication of that. It's a title not only for grandparents and grandfathers, grandmothers, and so forth, gender-neutral term, but it's also first and foremost, as the highest office in society, it is used for the supreme being, Nana Nyame. Nana Nyamewa. Nyame is the great father. Nyamewa is the great mother, the supreme being. The supreme being is comprised of the great father, Nyame, the great mother, Nyamewa, who function together as a unit, just like a male and female function together as a unit to create a child. Nyame is Amen from ancient Kemet. Nyamewa is Amenet, the great mother from ancient Kemet. And we're going to get into that as well. So that title, Nana, is used for Nana Nyame, Nana Nyamewa, the Nananum, plural, Nsamanko, meaning the ancestresses and ancestors who had achieved that title of Nana in life. So they continue to be Nana when they make their transition. They're an honored elder or an honored elderess, meaning a spiritually cultivated elder or elderess when they're on earth. So they become, instead of just Mpanyinfo, the elders or the older people, they become the class of Nananum Mpanyinfo. The plural of Nana is Nananum. So Nananum Mpanyinfo are those Mpanyinfo, those elders and elderesses who are Nananum, who are spiritually cultivated, whose every thought, intention, and action reflects the divine order, Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshe, or the order or arrangement of the supreme being. So Nananum Mpanyinfo, the spiritually cultivated elders and elderesses, when they make their transition to the ancestral realm, they become Nananum Nsamanfo. Nsamanfo, the discarnate spirits, the ancestral spirits who are Nananum, who are spiritually cultivated or honored. Of course, just like in the world, you can have older people who are not elders. Every elder person is older, but every older person is not an elder. So the Nananom Mpanyinfo, the spiritually cultivated elders and elderesses, are those who respect, those who we seek to emulate, those who we show our children to be, to represent a model of, you know, dignified, purified behavior. But then you also have the Nkwasea Panyin, quaseya means stupid or foolish. So you have the quaseya panyi, the stupid or foolish older person. So there's a difference between the nana panyin, the spiritually cultivated older person, which is an elder or elderess, and then the quaseya panyin, the stupid or foolish elder that you keep your children away from, the people who deserve no respect, the criminal type, the ignorant type, the juvenile, degenerate type. We don't respect all older people. We respect elders and elderesses, but not olders and olderesses. And there's a difference. So that nana title, when the people who are spiritually cultivated make their transition, they transition into the ancestral realm as nana nom nsamanfa, honored elderesses and elders. They've achieved that level. And then, of course, the abosom, the forces in nature, they are nana nom as well. They are honored, spiritually cultivated, spiritually in harmony forces in creation, the deities, the abosom. That's the term in Akan for divinities, abosom. Just like Orisha in the Yoruba tradition, Vodou in the fallen Ebe tradition, and so forth, abosom in the Akan tradition, the spirit forces that animate creation, the divine spirit forces that animate the sun, animate the moon, animate the oceans, rivers, earth mother, stars, black substance of space, and so forth. The organs within the great divine body of the Supreme Being. They are the organs, the smaller bodies within the great body that regulate order in the body. These are the deities, the spirit forces of creation, the children of Nyamewa, meaning the offspring or children of Nyamewa, Nyamewa, Amenet, and Amen. And they're called Nana as well. So that term Nana carries great weight. It carries divine quality. So anyone designated as Nana is dealing with spiritually cultivated and so forth. And this is what it means in Akan. Som means to serve in Akan. So Nana Som means to serve Som Nana, to serve Nana Nyame, the great father, to serve Som Nana Nyamewa, the great mother, to serve Som, the Nana Nom, Abosom Nina, all of the Abosom, the spirits of divine spirits animating creation, sun, moon, earth mother, and so forth, to serve Nana Nom Nsamapo, the spiritually cultivated divine ancestresses and ancestors. So when we say Nana Som, to serve Nana, that's dealing with Nana Nyame, Nana Nyamewa, the Nana Nom Abosom Nina, the deities, Nana Nom Nsamapo, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors. So we show that designation, but then we also show that, of course, once again, these terms are not, quote-unquote, Akan terms simply in West Afuraka, Afurakai. If you look at the parent language, the language of ancient Kanat, Nubian, ancient Kemet, which is actually the parent language of the various languages on the continent of Afuraka, the major languages, vast majority of the people on the continent of Afuraka, Afurakai, the parent language, is the language of ancient Kanat and Kemet, which is actually what some would describe as a Niger-Congo language or a Congo-Saharan language. It is the proto-language. So when we go back to the Medusa, the so-called hieroglyphics, and the language of ancient Kanat and Kemet, you will find that root, just like we said, Na means great, greatness, has to do with ancestry and connection. And the reduplication, and rare and precious and so forth. In the language of ancient Kemet, we find that Na means great, greatness, in the Medusu, in the hieroglyph. Nanu, a variation of that, means good or beautiful, precious, of course. Nanu also means grain, or the seed, the grain. Then we have Sum, which means a deed or undertaking. Sum in the language of ancient Kemet also means the action or custom. Sum also means to pile offerings upon an altar during ritual invocation. So, again, in our ancient language, just like Sum, we're talking about to serve in the Akan language, Nana, the great one, Nana Nyame, Nana Nyamewa, Nana Nomen Samapo, Nana Nomabosum, and Yina. Then you also have Na, which means great. great one, the seed, the seed people, the seed forces in creation that birth all things. Nah, the great, precious, and so forth. And then sown to an action or deed or undertaking to ritually provoke power offerings upon an altar. So nana sown means the same thing in the Akan language today as it would mean in ancient Kemet. So this is why the Nananom and Samapo, or our ancestors and ancestors who are spiritually cultivated of Akwamu mind, of the Akwamu nation in North America, they designated that term to use as an umbrella term for Afurakani, Afuraikani ancestral religion. And of course, we have all of that information, including the images of the Medusa, of the hieroglyphics, and the details and the breakdown linguistically of these terms on the page and in the document. So we wanted to define that properly so we can show people when we're talking about Akanfo, Nanason, we're talking about Nanason, to serve Nana, to serve the Great Father, to serve the Great Mother, to serve the Abosom, the divine forces that animate creation, and the Nananom and Samapo. Akanfo, of course, meaning Akan people's Afurakani, Afurakaini ancestral religion. We're talking about ancient, authentic ancestral religion, ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion. So now, why are we referring to Akanfo Nanason as ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion? We go through some truth story, and we talked a little bit about it earlier. After the migrations to the western part of the continent because of invasion, we reestablish our empires, reestablish our culture, our civilizations. When the whites and their offspring invade and Islam is infecting some in the population, many of our people migrated south and reestablished our Akan civilization, as we said, in the Savannah and Forest Belt region. Hundreds of years later, some of our people were infected to a certain degree with the Islamic nonsense. Most of our people didn't have anything to do with that, who are Akan. Hundreds of years after that, about 200 years ago, a little bit less than 200 years ago, the Christian missionaries, beginning with the Basu missionaries in the region of what is now Ghana, began to establish their little missions promoting that nonsense, promoting that fake religion of Christianity. So they started trying to force that false doctrine, that fourth false dogma, the fictional God, Jesus, who's a fictional character who never existed. There was no black Jesus. There was no white one. There was no Yeshua. And, of course, we go into that in one of our publications, The Cuckoo to the Tomb, The Ancestral Jurisdiction. So the infection of Christianity over the past almost 200 years, incrementally creeping into the consciousness of certain people, especially around the 1930s, 1940s, and 50s, and onwards, and then to a much lesser extent, the influence, the infectious and perverse influence of the pseudo-religion of Islam with their fake God Allah, the fake character who never existed, Muhammad and Bilal and all the other fake characters. And, of course, we've gone into that as well in our publications, in the Cuckoo Tum Tum, the ancestral jurisdiction, to prove these characters didn't exist. The corrupting influence of Islam and Christianity and even later Hinduism to a certain extent, Buddhism to a certain extent, when some of those individuals began to corrupt the culture, you'll see that some of our people began to incorporate different elements of that nonsense into the culture. By the time you get to the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and later, it's not only the fact that you see today in Ghana white Jesuses all over the place and people straightening out their hair and bleaching their skin, and you'll find that bleaching cream is one of the number one cosmetics across the western and central part of Afuraka, Afuraka, because of the brainwashing that has gone on with the people. They're worshiping fictional characters. Of course, they're straightening out their hair. That you'll see that running rampant. And, of course, it's rooted in that acceptance of that fake religion and therefore the acceptance of the whites and their offspring as trying to embrace them instead of recognizing them as our absolute enemy, the spirits of disorder, as we call them, Achiwadefo, spirits of disorder, who incarnate as spirits of disorder. So you see that corrupting influence in the culture, but it's rooted in the fake religion, which is the gateway that allows people to, or coerces people to accept the fake culture. So now, once that started happening and it started gaining steam in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and upward, then it began to infect the people. Of course, it infected the ritual practices. So the people who are quote-unquote elders today, so-called elders today, sitting on the continent, 80 years old, 90 years old, 100 years old, who have passed on an intergenerational infection. The small percentage of our people who migrated from the ancient Ghana Empire and came with the larger group didn't embrace Islam. They didn't embrace Judaism, Hebrewism, none of that nonsense. They didn't embrace Christianity. They left the ancient empire because they didn't want to have anything to do with that, and they saw some of our people succumbing to that nonsense. So they left the deteriorating neighborhood and reestablished Akan civilization 1,000 years ago in the Savannah and Forest Belt regions and continued to practice the culture. But later on, because of outside influences, a small percentage of the people who were escaping from the ancient Ghana Empire after numerous wars and so forth, some of them carried that infection and rejoined the group that preceded them and reconnected with the group that preceded them and brought some of that infection with them. Most of them did not, but the very small percentage did. The same thing happened with those who hundreds of years later became Christians. At first, most of our people had nothing to do with that. For decades, most of our people rejected that nonsense, but incrementally, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, 80 years in, they started bit by bit, more and more people beginning to embrace that nonsense. And so you have the infection of Christianity, infection of Islam, some of it for hundreds of years being passed on intergenerationally, infecting different elements of the culture. So when somebody confronts and interfaces with a so-called elder or elders on the continent, you may see them sitting there speaking the language. You may, or they're here speaking the language, wearing traditional dress, appearing to, wearing traditional clothes and everything, eating traditional food, speaking in proverbial wisdom, talking about the deities, talking about the ancestresses and ancestors. All of that looks very authentic. But what you don't understand is that they've incorporated intergenerationally false doctrine that came from the Muslim invasion, came from the Christian missionary perversion, and it's been woven into the culture by the ignorant, woven into the culture by the criminal who wanted to work on behalf of the whites and their offspring to brainwash the rest of the population. It's like we had Negroes on the plantation who will work as overseers and whip the slaves, enslaved, on behalf of the white master. Just like we had to take those Negroes out, we've always had turncoats wherever we were, at a very small percentage. So you have so-called elders and elderesses who have passed on this infection intergenerationally out of ignorance, some of them who have passed it on because they are criminals, cultural criminals, and criminals otherwise. So you have that. And it's infected the culture to a great degree. It's not only in the Akan tradition. You'll find that in Yoruba tradition, Ebe, Bon, Igbo, across the board, you'll find the whites and their offspring influence, perverse influence in some fashion in various aspects of the culture or different elements of the culture where they've woven it in. And if you don't look beyond the surface, you may not be able to perceive it initially. And this is what we do. When we talk about ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion, we're talking about the religion, the real, authentic religion of our ancestresses and ancestors, Kanat, first and foremost, from the Kanat or Kanit land, from ancient Kanat, who migrated and reestablished Kanat or Ghana and migrated south and reestablished Akana civilization. And then when some of us were snatched and taken to the Western Hemisphere, we reestablished Akana civilization in the Western Hemisphere. And you'll find that whether it was the so-called slave rebellion in New York in 1712 when there are Akan people revolting against the whites in the offspring and killing the whites in the offspring, or somebody like Nat Turner whose revolution, killing the whites in the offspring and burning down plantations and freeing people going from plantation to plantation, Nat Turner was Akan. You'll find in Jamaica the Maroons, many of them were icon, culturally dominant icon. You'll find in Cinnamon Bay, the revolt in Cinnamon Bay where they killed the crackers and took over the island for a period, icon there. Then you have people in Suriname, Maroons in Suriname, icon people there. So you'll find that in the culture, you'll see the first people, foremost people, people who calculate, reckon, establish civilization, but also revolutionaries, resolutionaries. We continue to carry our culture and on various fronts, whether it's physical, spiritual, intellectual, dealing with engineering or whatever it was, you'll find icon people in many ways in the forefront reestablishing culture. So you'll find that over here, and you found it over there. So we show those migratory patterns, we show the linguistic patterns, we show the cultural patterns, we show all of that. And even by the time we get here, we still maintain the culture. When people continue to practice hoodoo or undo, ritual medicine, spirit possession, getting possessed by the spirits and nature and the Nananoman Samapo, and getting information from them, getting direction from them, using the information and direction that they received from the Nananoman Samapo to go out into the forest, pick the proper plant life, mineral life, create the proper combinations, poison the food supply of the slave master, poison the water supply, kill the slave master, kill his staff, kill his family, burn the plantation down, and free ourselves from enslavement. We continue to use our ancestral religious practices to get the proper knowledge to resurrect not only the traditional culture, but to bring order and balance to our people who were disordered and imbalanced wherever we were. So we continued the practices. We never stopped. We carried the spirit of our ancestresses and ancestors in our blood. We carried the, you know, the power, the motivation, everything in our cry, in our moja, in our soul, and in our blood. So those are the true historical and genetic and so-called, you know, foundational basis for identity as icon people. Ancient, authentic, icon, ancestral religion, we're dealing with that ancient tradition that goes across the continent from ancient times all the way through to the Western Hemisphere, and we seek out and we eliminate the perverse influences that have entered the culture through Christianity, Islam, pseudo-New Age spiritualism, pseudo-New Age humanitarianism, and all of that nonsense. Now, before we go forward, we just want to see if anybody has any questions. Of course, you can put them in the chat room. And, okay, now we're going to get into some cosmology, because we want to deal with that. But before we get to that, just so people understand, when you hear the term Akampo Nanason, you must always think the subtitle, of course, ancient, authentic, icon, ancestral religion. So what we're doing is restoring and have restored authentic icon tradition, minus the corruptions of Islam, minus the corruptions of Christianity, minus the corruptions of white influences. And again, when we talked about certain elders and elderesses and many people on the continent, the way they practice the tradition, and most people who confront them, interface with them on the continent or here in the Western Hemisphere, they get an infected tradition that has happened in many different ways. And people who don't even realize that they're communicating with people who are dealing with, for example, spirits that are not deities. They're being told that this is an Abosom, this is a shrine for an Abosom. They spend hundreds of dollars or sometimes thousands of dollars to become initiated as Akompo or priests and priestesses of this deity, only to find out years later that the spirit was never a deity in the first place. It was just the spirit of somebody's deceased relative who wasn't even icon either. So it's not a deity, and it's not even an icon ancestral spirit. It's just a discarnate spirit of somebody's relative, and they're just trying to make money off of people and lie to them and tell them these are deities. Other people are lying to people, but they don't realize that they're passing on a lie. They've been passing on misinformation for years, for generations very often, doing that on the continent and doing that here. So what makes something authentic for us is first when you understand your identity. First understand yourself as an Afurakani, Afuraikaidi person, an African person, knowing what that actually means. And we're going to get into our spiritual anatomy very soon. Knowing what that means and understanding what your identity is. Your identity is not based on purely blood transmission. It's based on you as a spirit before you come into the womb. You are an ancestral spirit returning. Before you come into the womb in our Khan culture and just across the board for Afurakani, Afuraikaidi people, we are drawn to the great mother and great father. We are given a kra or a krawa, a soul, a divine consciousness. We're given a specific function to execute in the world, which in our Khan is called Nkra and Nkrabia, a specific configuration of spiritual energy to execute that function, which we call She and Shebia, the male and female aspects of that energy, and Nkra and Nkrabia are the male and female aspects of that divine function, often called destiny. And, of course, we have the book Okra, Okra Complex, The Soul of our Akanfo, where we break down the Nkra, Nkrabia, She, and Shebia to clear up the, you know, miscommunication. When you're dealing with identity, you're given that specific function executed in the world. It's encoded within your kra, that soul, divine consciousness. Your kra is an actual deity. It is a force in nature, a conscious, divine spirit force in nature, like the other divinities that animate nature. That spiritual force, your kra, is given to you, assigned to you. It's a deity assigned to you to dwell with you throughout your life. It takes up residence in the head region. It's that force that you feel in your head region that pulls you in one direction or the other, always pulling you in harmony towards divine order. And you have to make the distinction between if that's the pull of the Okra or some other discarnate spirit, and that's easily done through just experience and ritual practice, and we're going to talk about that as well. So that Kra is a divine force. It's called the Ori Inu in the Yoruba tradition, the Seilido in Vodun, and the Ka or the Kaek, male or female, in ancient Kemet. It's a deity that dwells in the head region that you seek to align yourself with and consult with to make proper decisions. So when you have that divinity assigned to you before you even incarnate into the womb, you are a spirit and you've been given an okra, like a body being given a brain. Now you're a whole entity. Now you're a whole spirit. Now you can be sent into the womb. And then you're sent into a womb and eventually you're born into the world. Now, your identity is based on what divinity was assigned to you pre-incarnation and what blood circle you were sent into the world by after you were given your kra, your Nananoman Samanfo, your ancestresses and ancestors in the ancestral realm send you through a specific blood circle, through a specific descendant, and then you come through that womb eventually, and 40 weeks later, you're born into the world. Now, when somebody is living, they make their transition. Say you were living on the continent. We use that example all the time. Say you were an Akan person living in Ahuni Koko. You were, you know, living as an Asona person in the Ahuni Koko region of Wenchi in what is now Ghana 300 years ago, and you died in that region. And before you died, your daughter was taken into enslavement in North America 300 years ago, and you saw her get kidnapped and taken away, and you died as an elder in that region. And now you're her ancestor, and she's on a boat, and she's eventually taken to North America, and she's living in North America, enslaved on a plantation, and she pours libation to you when she can, and you guide her from the ancestral realm. You are an Akan person. You're a spirit now. You're living in the ancestral realm. Say you were Akwamu, and you were of the Akan ethnic group. There are subgroups of the Akan people, the Asante, the Fanti, the Akwamu, and so forth. Say you're one of the Akwamu. You made your transition. You're an Akwamu ancestor. You're living in this ancestral realm right now, Asamando, the ancestral realm, and your daughter is growing up on a plantation right now. She's being tortured and everything else. She gets shipped to different plantations. Eventually she has, you know, she's forced to copulate with another enslaved brother, and they have a child, and that's your grandchild. And as your grandchild grows up, your daughter, her mother, teaches her how to pour libation to you. You try to guide both of them whenever you can, and they try to break free from enslavement and follow your guidance and so forth. They become marooned. You know, she grows up, your granddaughter grows up, she marries somebody, they have a child, and generation after generation, you see your descendants in America growing up in America, you know, generation after generation, having children, and you're watching over them as best as you can as an ancestor. Eventually, after numerous generations, it's time for you to return into the world. You're an ancestor in the ancestral realm. Your spirit is drawn before Nyamewa Nyame, the great father and the great mother. You're given an Akra, divine divinity assigned to you, a specific function to execute in the world. The other ancestresses and ancestors who are your elders and elderesses in that ancestral community send you through a specific blood circle. You come through your great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter's womb. She has grown up. She's now a young woman. She gets married, and she copulates with her spouse, draws your spirit into her womb. 40 weeks later, you're born into the world. Now, when you're growing up and you don't recall at that point who you are, and you're asking your mother, where do we come from? And she's been brainwashed in the public school system in America. She says, well, we don't know where we come from. We've been mixed up on the boats during slavery and plantations and through rape and everything else, and we'll never figure out who we are. Our blood is all mixed up, and we're just black people in America. But you're the exact same Akwamu elder who lived in Akwenikoko 300 years ago. You're the exact same Akan individual who has returned into the world. Your blood may be mixed, but your soul is not. You can mix blood, but you cannot mix the Akra. You cannot mix the soul. And that's one of the Epe, or the divine wisdom teachings, in Akwamu Mind, Amarukai Tifimu, the Akwamu Nation in North America, that was given to us by Nananom and Samafo from the Abosom, specifically to remind us through the purification process. And this is something we teach throughout the year, especially in a punctuated fashion during our 7-day New Year celebration, which is Ojida, which is in September, during the Joa Dao, the Monday, Nyiseng Krong Krong Da of that 7-day celebration. We always focus on that specific wisdom teaching from the Abosom and Nananoma and Samafo. You can mix blood, but you cannot mix the soul. That proves to us that our identity is based on the spirit that is sent into the womb. Even though the blood mixture may have happened, that same spirit that has an Akra, that was assigned to them by the Supreme Being, that's a spiritual entity that comes into the world and has that same identity from when they used to live on the continent as part of a specific ancestral group. So they're the same individual. And when they grow up, and they start studying in Akan culture, and their ancestors and ancestors, the same ones that ushered them into the womb and through a certain blood circle, those are the same ones that, as that person is growing up, will direct them towards Akan culture, direct them towards Akan language, direct them towards Akan art, direct them towards Akan motifs and various expressions of culture, and eventually communicate with them in dreams, communicate them during with libation, communicate with them through animal totems and so forth that are related to their clan, and that person begins to study and learn about the culture, and then they reconnect and establish an ancestral shrine and begin to communicate with those same Nananom and Samafo ancestresses and ancestors that they lived with in the ancestral realm as part of a community, the same ones that sent them into the womb through a specific blood circle. They communicate with those same ones again. But now they're on Earth, and those ancestors and ancestors are still in Asamando. They communicate with them, and they give them the information. They remind them of their language and speak to them in the language, whether it's through spirit possession, through clairvoyance, through clear audience and so forth, they speak and show them and teach them and put people in front of that individual to confirm what they're hearing at the shrine. So when we're talking about identity, we're talking about the spirit that came into the womb. And this is true for Afro-Arakani, Afro-Arakani people, or African people in general. Every black person can find out what specific ancestral clan you came from that you are an incarnation of. You can find that directly and only from your ancestresses and ancestors. You don't go to a priest and get a roots reading to find that out. You don't go to somebody else to find that out. You go to your people, your blood ancestresses and ancestors. They're the ones who can tell you exactly who you are. Some of them have already told you in different ways, which you may have not contextualized yet. But as you begin to study more of the culture, you'll find they've been giving you clues for years, and it's all going to come together very soon. But it is direct through your direct ancestresses and ancestors that you find out who you are and you confirm who you are. You don't spend money to pay somebody. You don't go somewhere. You don't have to go to the continent. In fact, no matter what you do with someone else, no matter what they tell you, it's not going to be real until you confirm it with your own direct blood ancestresses and ancestors yourself. Until you do that, all you're doing is engaging in foolish belief, and that's not part of our culture. Our culture is about gaining knowledge, gaining experience, and incorporating that knowledge and experience in reality. So it is our responsibility as Afro-Arakani men and Afro-Arakani women to connect with our own kra, our soul, our divine consciousness, the abosom that govern us, that have been with us pre-incarnation and came into the world with us, and connect with our nananom and samapo, our ancestresses and ancestors. And we, of course, we will get into more of that in detail. So that's identity. When you find out, so for people, and that's just black people across the board, for those who find out that they are Akan, then when we talk about Akanfo Nanason, we're talking about ancient authentic Akan ancestral religion. So it starts off first with finding out from your direct ancestresses and ancestors, your Akanfo Nananom Nsamanfo, your Akan, you know, spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, they would direct you to that information. It's encoded with your, in your own Akra. The Nananom Nsamanfo just give you specifics about that and give you guidance on how to, you know, determine that and learn that, and they'll give you information to remind you. But everything you need is encoded within your spiritual brain or your Akra. And then the abosom that are connected to you, the other abosom that are connected to you, give you the power to execute your function, just like the Nsamanfo will give you the guidance on how to execute that function without creating disorder in the world in the process or in your family in the process. So all of that knowledge is encoded within your kra. Your Nsamanfo will help you with the keys to unlock that information and confirm that information for you. So it first begins with establishing a connection with your Nananom Nsamanfo, with your ancestresses and ancestors. And, of course, we have the article, Nkomre, Ancestral Shrine Communication. We have a few other articles as well on the website on the Akanfo Nanason page where we go into detail about that. And then, we have a few videos. And we have a question right quick. Okay, it says, is there a recommended source to verify personal ancestry? So this is what we're getting into right now. So, and this is just, it's true across the board for ancestral religion in general. It's not a sense of you have to learn divination and things like that. Your ancestresses and ancestors, your Nananom Nsamanfo, are required to communicate with you by Inyamewa Inyame, and they've been doing that. Of course, you have other ancestresses and ancestors who are not necessarily cultivated. Periodically, they will communicate or send a message and things like that, but the Nananom and Samapo have the responsibility to help you identify and confirm your identity from the specific clan that you were a part of in your previous lifetime, and through Bebra, or rebirth, reincarnation, you've come back into the world, no matter what blood circle you came through or what womb you came through. Specifically, you're still connected to the same Abosom you were tied to. If you were connected to that river divinity in Ghana, like the river Afram, then you're still connected to that same divinity in this incarnation. So that deity's energy is still connected to your spirit. When you come into the womb, you carry that energy with you. If you were connected to, you know, another divinity, then you're going to be connected to that same divinity when you come into the world. So Nananoa Mansamafo will confirm for you what clan that you were a part of in the previous incarnation, previous lifetime, and today. They're required to do so. So to verify your personal ancestry, it first begins with establishing a strong connection to your Nananoa Mansamafo, an ancient Kemet called Aku and Akutu, the shining ones or illuminated ones, enlightened ones. That simply means it's a title for the ancestresses and ancestors, and they'll show sometimes a star illumination because they're illuminated ones, the ones who can see in the, you know, see in the darkness, who have that, you know, that vision, that awareness, perception, can see what's in harmony with order and so forth. Nananoa Mansamafo in the Akan tradition. So establishing a direct connection with them and then working that connection. Again, they are required to communicate with us, and they do that willingly, of course. One of the most, hold on one second, excuse me. One of the clearest ways that they communicate, even before someone establishes an ancestral shrine, one of the clearest ways that they communicate is through the dream state. Even for people who are not necessarily, who have shut down some of their receptivity for one reason or another, very often we're receptive as children spiritually. Some children can see a spirit here and there. They can hear one or feel one, touch them or something like that. They're taught in this culture to be scared of that, or it's evil, or it's demonic, things like that. So then they shut it off. And sometimes they shut it off until they're older, in their 40s and 50s and 60s and so forth, and they'll remember when they used to be able to do that. So sometimes we shut those things off because of conditioning. But even when that happens, another way they communicate is through the dream state. They'll come to you in your dreams when you don't have that ability to just, through your conditioning, shut them off, show you different things, give you different information and so forth. Then there's also, of course, we establish what we call Nkombre, an ancestral shrine. Nkom in Akan culture means spiritual communication. Bede means time. Bede means place. It also means a specific manner or a specific way. So the reason we use the term Nkombre is a place, a spiritual place, this place, Bede, of spiritual communication, to communicate in a specific manner, Bede, specific time, sacred time, Bere, and in a specific space, a ritual space, Bere. So Nkombre, spiritual communication, time, place, and manner. So in our common mind, we use that terminology, Nkombre. There are different ways to refer to an ancestral shrine, but this is the way that we refer to it to always remind us that Nkom, spiritual communication, is conducted in a specific space, Bede, in a specific time, Bede, in a specific manner, Bede, Nkombre. So establishing that Nsama Nkombre, or ancestral shrine, that's the first step. And beginning to go to the shrine and sit, you pour libation, do Oshui, and of course we have that information in the article, with the basic libation in the Akan language as well as an English translation. We also have videos that go into some detail about the articles that we publish. But establishing that connection and beginning to listen to your Nsamafo, pouring libation is the call. It's the evocation. Vok, the root vok meaning to call. when someone is pouring libation, doing goshue, using prayers and so forth, that is an evocation. They're calling people, their nananoma and samapo, to come forward and asamapo pa, which are their good pa, samapo. You have samapo pa, which are good ancestresses and ancestors. They may not have necessarily been spiritually cultivated, but they were still good people nevertheless, and they're still working on their spiritual cultivation in Asamando, in the ancestral realm. But they have your best interests at heart, like a deceased grandmother or aunt and so forth, who was a good person, and they're still working on their spiritual cultivation. They come forward at the shrine, but then you also have the nananoma and samapo, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors who, once they reach that level of development, it is their responsibility given to them as a group by Nyame Wa Nyame to assist us in our development. That's their role and responsibility, and of course they willingly and gladly engage and oblige that process. So when you pour libation and engage in ritual prayer, you're calling them forth. We first call on Nyame Wa Nyame, the Great Mother, Great Father, the Abosom, and then the Nananoma, Samapo, Asamapo, Pa. That's the call. That's no different than getting on the phone and calling some people to come to your house. Then once the people come to the house, you don't just pour libation, call the Nsamapo, and then once they show up, then you leave the shrine and go somewhere else. The reason you pour libation and engage in ritual prayer is so that you can communicate and sit with them and listen. And just like you would call your great-grandparents into the room, the living room, the front room, so to speak, and once they got there, you would sit down, ask questions, and listen, and get information that's valuable. We do the same thing. We pour libation. We engage in ritual prayer. Sometimes people engage in other ritual practices, whether it's ritual song or ritual drumming or something, whatever it is, through that invocatory process. That is to ask the Nsamapo to come forward, ask the Abosom to come forward. And then once they come forward, then you sit down and you listen, and the questions you have, you put forward. We do not pray in the language of the whites and our offspring. The Abosom do not communicate in English. They never have, they never will. They're not limited to being forced to communicate with that, and they don't. The Nananoma and Samapo do not communicate in English as well. You could talk English all day long, but they're not paying attention to that. The only spirits that will pay attention to English are our most recent departed, recent ancestresses and ancestors, and those people are spiritually, they're nice people, but they're not necessarily spiritually cultivated. They still can communicate like that sometimes, a parent, grandparent, and so forth. But what you'll notice is those who are not unknown, they do not communicate in that perverse language. They communicate in the sacred language of our ancestresses and ancestors, because the way our languages are structured, they carry the energy of the Abosom. It's not just one word or a handful of words like in pseudo-religious cultures like Hinduism that are mantras. All of the words in Afurakani, Afurakaitni languages have mantric value. Everything is sacred. They have their own meaning. They have their own tone, pitch, inflection, and so forth. They're structured in a fashion where they carry a specific meaning. They're connected to the forces in nature. So our languages are sacred. We only project that sacred sound vibration, collections of sound vibrations, to our ancestresses and ancestors. We don't project the perverse language of the whites and offspring that was beaten into us and perverse that discordant language to the ancestral realm. We don't do that. Plus, they don't listen to it anyway. So there are some people who will say, well, you know, Eshu or Kwekwanasi speaks all languages. In reality, they don't. Of course, they could, but they don't. Just like you can do something that's criminal, but if you live in harmony with order, you don't do that. It's not that you don't have the capacity or the ability to do so, you just don't. So what they communicate with, and even if you can't speak traditional language, they still communicate with you through your spirit. Even when you're about to communicate something to somebody, like say you want to go pick up somebody from the airport. If you're going to convey that information to somebody, first it manifests in your spirit. You visualize or you think about yourself going to get this specific person, this specific energy, this in this specific situation. Then you find the English words that you've learned throughout your life to wrap around that feeling or that desire that you have, and then you convey it verbally. That's a process. First, the image of what you're doing and the desire for what you want to do manifests. The Abosom and Unsamapo, they communicate based on that. Even before you get a chance to wrap it up in English verbiage and repeat it, you already know what you want to say. Now you have to figure out how to say it, and since you speak English, you know how to say it. Just like if you're learning another language. And if you want to go to the store and you say, well, how do I say I want to go to the store in this language? You already have the desire to engage a certain process. You're trying to find verbiage to communicate what you want to do. The Insamapo are not listening to the verbiage if it's not a traditional language. They're tuning into what your spirit is trying to accomplish, and they communicate on that basis. Also, in that same vein, some people are born deaf and mute. Does that mean that they can't communicate with the Insamapo because they can't speak, and they can't speak language, and they can't hear language? Of course not. The Insamapo, the Abosom, communicate with our people who are deaf. In fact, they protect them on a higher level. And if somebody assaults or attacks somebody with that kind of, birth defect in our communities, then they get increased punishment from the Insamapo and from the Abosom because those people are protected. Just like in our community, we tend to protect if a baby is born with a disability, we protect them. If somebody tries to, attack them, they get extra, force and fire from the people who are protecting the person who is disabled in our community. It's the same thing with the Unsamapo. So if somebody's born deaf and mute, they still have a spirit, they still have a cry, and they can communicate with the Abosom. We have been, quote-unquote, born in this hemisphere deaf and mute spiritually, meaning we don't speak the language when we're born, and we don't hear the language when we're born because it's been was beaten out of us to a certain extent. But spiritually, just like the deaf or mute person, we have that protection from the Insamapo. They know what we have gone through, and they know what we desire to do. So when you sit in front of that shrine, they know what you want. They know what you. So all you have to do is visualize or emanate that desire of what you're trying to learn, what you're trying to accomplish, what you're trying to embrace, what you're trying to know. And then they oblige by giving you that information, planting that information in your spirit, planting that information in your mind, planting specific images or directions or directives or individuals you need to communicate with or connect with in order to accomplish what you need to accomplish and learn what you need to learn. But they also admonish us to begin to learn whatever specific language of the group that we're from, what we need to learn. So they will give us that information and confirm that information about what group we come from. These are our family members. They know what group we came from. They used to live with us not only in the ancestral realm, but when we were living on the continent, they were living with us and they were part of that group. They know what group they come from. They speak the language. They will show you, if they haven't already, what group you come from. And they will push you towards studying that specific language. Even if you don't know the language yet, there are two things you could do. When you first learn about the language or the culture, then start studying the language. Even if your prayer is three words, just the name of the Great Mother and the Great Father, the Abosom and the Insamapo, then you use that until you learn more language. Before you learn the specific group that you are from, our ancestral language is the language of ancient Kanak and Kemet, of course, the language Kemet, Egypt, and so forth, in the Mendutu. So you can use that language, and that will, as your ancestral language, and we still use that as well, and you can use that to communicate with your ancestors and ancestors, no matter what group you come from, because these various groups all derived from that ancient root in the first place. So that language covers whether you find out your Igbo, Yoruba, Akan, or whatever it is, you can start off communicating with your ancestors and ancestors, the Aku, Akutu, in the language of ancient Kemet, and then they will direct you to what specific group that you operated through and became a part of after we left ancient Kemet and went to the western central parts and southern parts of the continent, and they will show you what group you come from, because we didn't just leapfrog from ancient Kemet to where we are right now. We went through a process. Our people migrated to different areas. Some migrated to mountainous regions. Some migrated to riverine areas. Some migrated to other areas near the sea or ocean. We took on the energy of the region, incorporated the abosome of the region that affected ourselves, affected our spirit. And then when we had children, they're connected to that new configuration of energy and move forward. So that's important. That's key. And then our culture and our language takes on the nuances of the energy that we come in contact with, that we interface with when we move to these different regions and incorporate these abosome into our blood circuit. When they possess us, when they communicate with us, transform ourselves, and then we have children, those children are the firstborn that resonate at the frequency of the energy of those local divinities. And that colors our language, colors the way we express ourselves in song, dance, ritual practices, and this is where we get different dialects of language from, different cultural practices, slightly different ways of wearing clothing, slightly different ways of drumming, and different things like that. So that's all part of our ancestry, all part of our heritage, and it's connected to our spirit, so we need to attune to that, so we don't just use just the ancient language of Kemet. If somebody had not incarnated since ancient Kemet and leapfrogged all the way up until now, that's one thing, but that's not what is happening. Our people came through a process. We didn't just live in ancient Kemet and all of a sudden we're born in America. We came through West Central Afurakai, and so forth, and we have the energy of the abosome and how they manifest in these different regions and through the blood circle of the people. And once those abosome possess us and affect our blood circle, we have children, then wherever we go in the world, including when we're forced to migrate into the Western Hemisphere, our blood itself and our spirits themselves resonate at a frequency that's a magnet for those same abosome. So they are connected with us incarnation after incarnation, transcarnationally, through successive incarnations. So no matter where we go in the world, these abosome will still possess us ritually. The Nananoman Samapa will possess us ritually. They will teach us language. They will show us ritual. They will take us in the forest or possess and go take the person that they possess into the forest and show us how to prepare medicine, prepare herbs, engage divination, and so forth. And, of course, our ancestresses and ancestors who engage these processes on the continent, they are still with us. So they will reintroduce us to divination, reintroduce us to medicine, reintroduce us to ritual song, ritual dance, different colors of clothing that are ritual and so forth, and carry the specific energy of an abosome we need to carry, names, all these different things. All these different things are connected, and the Nsamapo will show us. And the only way you can engage in authentic practice, whether it's Akanfo, Nanasom, or any other variation, or expression of Nanasom, is through your direct blood ancestresses and ancestors. We are not dependent on anyone outside of our blood circle to teach us our culture. In fact, you cannot embrace an authentic expression of the culture except through your blood ancestresses and ancestors. And if you don't deal with them and attempt to go to the continent or go somewhere else and try to get culture, then that's not an authentic practice. Only until you connect with your direct blood relatives and your direct abosome that came into the world with you and were assigned to you pre-incarnation, then that's authenticity. Anything outside of that is no different than Christianity. You're just following somebody because you just feel like you want to follow somebody. And that's what's not being taught. So let me, what we're going to get into now is to get into some details with regard to that, because the cosmology is what's key to understanding that piece. Give me 1 second. I'll be right back. If anybody has any questions in the chat room, just send a question. I'll be right back. Give me a second. Okay, so let me just check and make sure it's no. Okay, and for the people who came in later, if you had a question on the phone line, just hit the number 1 so we can see that your hand is raised and then we can answer the question. So let's get into some of the cosmology so we can understand. We talked about a little bit about identity, and in the upcoming shows, we're going to get into specific texts, like, for example, the Okra Complex, the Soul of Akonkwo. We're going to get into that, and we're going to get into different books that we have where we're going into detail about these practices. And before we go there, let me just say for now, quickly, for those who came in late as well, and I'll put this in the chat room. So when we talk about the books that we have 10 books in soft cover right now. We have 15 altogether. All of those are in PDF, e-book form, but then we also have 10 of them. In addition to the e-book version, we have the soft cover version. They range between $8 and $11, so we sell those on the website. The page for that is the Nhoma page, so it's odirafo.com/Nhoma. Nhoma.html. And we have, for example, we mentioned Afuraka Afraikai, the origin of the term Africa. So we show cosmologically and linguistically the origin of the term, showing it comes directly from our people, designating this first landmass to rise up at the beginning of the created world. First landmass of earth is the Ka of Afura, the land of the creator. Afuraka became corrupted into Africa. And Afurai Kayat is the land of the creatress. So we prove that in that particular book. We also have Maranechi, Divine Law and Divine Hate, talking about divine orders comprised of two wholes, upholds the divine law and divine hate. There are deities, male and female, of law, which is Ma'a and Ma'at. There are deities of divine hate, which is Heru, Behuden, and Sekhmet, also called Fena and Abena in the Akan tradition. So we go into detail about that, and that's a key piece when we're dealing with Akonkwo Nanason. Then we have a number of different books, so if you go to the website, we go into detail, show the books. You can download the free ebook versions. The ebooks are all free of all of our books, all 15 books, all the 60-plus articles, all of the videos, of course, are all free. The soft cover versions, we print ourselves in-house, in color, on our own printers. We sell the soft cover versions, and again, they range from $8 to $11, and we also have a process whereby people, two things. On one hand, if people like to generate additional income for themselves, you can purchase our soft cover publications wholesale, and then you can sell them as an entrepreneur retail and generate income for yourself while you're also getting the information out. The books typically sell themselves when people see them. For example, they see the Cuckoo Tun Tun, the ancestral jurisdiction. Not only do they see the vivid images of the deities of ancient Kemet, but they also see just on the front cover, we're talking about that not only cosmology, but the fact that Jesus is a fictional character, Yeshua is a fictional character, Muhammad is a fictional character, Moses, Aaron, David, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Bilal, Allah, Yahweh, Brahman, Buddha. We go into all these different characters, show how they were manufactured by the whites and their offspring, show why they never existed of any race whatsoever, and show the actual cosmology of Kemet that they took fragments of, corrupted it, and manufactured these fictional cartoon characters. So when people see that just on the front cover, they want to typically purchase the book just to see what that's about, or they see the information where we prove that dissexuality, homosexuality, was never accepted in ancient Kemet. We properly translate these various texts and show the translations and prove that The various different texts we have, people, you know, the texts sell themselves. Okay, the question is there a certain order to read the 15 books? Yes, so when you look on the website, just on the general, on the ojidapo.com website, there's a section, like we have different sections, like you read the introduction, and then under that we have the section for the publications, we have the link to the publications, then we have a link to the videos, and we have a link to the Guamukasa, the public speaking things, like if you want us to come out to your area to speak, and then there's a section for a self-study curriculum, and then communal study and reintegration. And what that is a step-by-step process listed in order of the publications in order that we recommend that people begin to study. And it begins with the Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction. That originally came out as a 3-CD set. We put all the MP3 files on the website, which you can download and listen to, and then the book itself is the full transcript. The 80-page book is full transcript of that 3-CD set, plus additional information as well as the images from the Medutu, the hieroglyphics, and as well as the deities from ancient Kemet that prove, as we were saying, that these fictional characters like Jesus and Muhammad and all these characters didn't exist. We go into detail about that. So Kukutuntun is first. Then the Uben Shang, the ancestral summons, where we talk about ritual practices and their functionality, like ancestral communication, ancestral and deity possession, libation, shrines, ritual song, ritual dance, nature worship, talismans, amulets, idols, all these different things that the whites in our spring try to say are criminal, superstitious, ignorant, and so forth. We show that every ritual practice that we engage in has a specific function. We receive, process, and transmit energy in a specific, measurable fashion. Because if we weren't doing that, then we wouldn't engage in ritual. Nothing that we do is symbolic. Just like when you're eating, it's not symbolic. You're actually receiving some food, you're processing it, transforming it into fuel, and then using that fuel to power yourself. And when we engage in ritual practice, we engage a process where we provoke and receive energy from the Abosom, or the ancestral spirit. We provoke, we receive that energy, process it in our spirit, and then utilize it, transmit it, and utilize it in a measurable fashion. And that's what these ritual practices do. So we go into detail about that. That's the Uben Shang, then the Wabo Jido. So step by step, the publications are laid out on that page. And then you'll find the publications in the soft cover, of course, on the Nhoma page. So, okay, and I just want to check right quick to make sure there's not a question on the phone line. All right. Okay, so, yeah, so two things. So one thing you could, if you'd like to, well, people can just purchase one or more books if you want to. For those who would like to generate income for themselves, we have right there on the page, there's a video at the bottom. We have all the books. Then on the Nhoma page, the publications page, then, and, you know, a way to order them, of course. Then up under that, we have a video and a document, and it says Nokwadefo Distributor Information Document. Nokwadefo means those who disseminate truth, and it shows how to become a Nokwadefo, or that's our term for distributor, one who disseminates or distributes truth. And it's basically showing the breakdown of the wholesale price and just how to, you know, what you need to do and so forth. And in the video, we go through seven of the books, and we're going to update the video to add three because we, at the time we did the video, we had seven books in soft cover. A few weeks ago, we released three more. So now we have 10 books in soft cover, so we're going to add those on as well. But the video is still the proper information. We go through the seven books, what's in the seven books, basically a review, and how to become a distributor, Nokwadefo, which is very simple. Just, you know, picking out the books you want to order wholesale and just, you know, sending us the order, basically. That's it. Then also, some people make donations. If you make a donation of $15 or more, we will send you a book. Just remember to send us, when you hit the donation button, they don't always have the address associated with it. So remember to let us know which book you want, and also remember to send the address so we can do that. So there's also the option, PayPal has added an option where you can make a donation, but you can also click an option if you want it to be recurrent. So a recurrent donation simply means that, say, for example, one brother, he made a donation of $15, and he clicked the option that said, do you want to make this recurrent? And therefore, every month, PayPal automatically sends us $15 from his, he automatically authorizes them to send a $15 donation on a monthly basis. So since he did $15 or more, we will send him a book, at least one book every month. We have 10 books out right now. So for at least the next 10 months, he will have, you know, a book coming. You can cancel the recurring donation whenever you want to. We have more books coming out. So even a month from now, we're going to have at least two more books out, and there are actually more coming. We have the Accra Day Bolton book that will be coming out. We have a number of books, actually, that will be released soon that we're actually preparing to be released. So we'll have more than enough to cover that. So if somebody wants to make a, you know, recurrent donation, you can do that as well. But any donation is fine, but anything $15 and over, we will send you a book anyway. So, and that way, that supports the efforts that we are engaged in. When we do presentations, we always give a free copy of one of our books out to everybody who comes. When we do presentations in different cities, we do not charge an admissions fee. We never charge an admissions fee for people to come to our presentations or our workshops or our training. And we also don't charge organizers a speaker's fee for bringing us out to do a presentation. Like some people are charged $1,000 to come out and do a presentation. We don't charge a speaker's fee. We also to the organizers, and we also do not charge attendees to our events an admissions fee to get in and hear, you know, the culture. So, and, you know, the information that's actually ancestrally ours anyway. So if you would like to connect with us on that level to bring us out, we were just in Philadelphia a few weeks ago. We were in Baltimore. We were in Connecticut a few weeks ago. In July, we were in Baltimore. So in July 5th, we were in Connecticut. July 12th, I think it was, we were in Baltimore. August 9th, we were in Philadelphia as a keynote speaker for the Sankofa Festival, Sankofa Fashe. We have some events coming up. We will be doing something in D.C. We have another event coming up in Philadelphia, a regular presentation in Philadelphia on, it's going to be the first weekend of September. So we will be sending information out about that, so stay tuned for that, to the website. So if you want us to come out to your region, just hit us up on the website, on the email, also on Facebook, or on our Ning site, you can hit us up on that, and we can talk about that as well. We can schedule something. We can work that out. Last announcement, in 6 minutes, the live stream portion to be off and only the phone portion you'll be able to listen to. So if you want to stay on, we'll do a little bit in overtime. You have to call in within the next 6 minutes. The call-in number is 657-383-0635. So 657-383-0635. You actually have 4.5 minutes to call in before the live stream cuts off, and only the people on the phone will be able to continue to listen past 11 o'clock. All right. So let's go to, first let's get to some of the distinctions. And, of course, this is going to be a weekly show, so we're going to be building on a number of different things. Let's get to some of the distinctions. Again, we said Akampo Nanasong, ancient authentic Akan ancestral religion. So let's start with something that distinguishes authentic Akan ancestral religion, which is different from what, again, we've been confronted with over the past few decades here in America in the West, as well as on the continent, so you can make the proper distinction. We coined the term Akanfo Nanasom. Of course, Akanfo is an ancient term, of course. Nanasom is the term we use for ancestral religion. So when we combine those, Akanfo Nanasom, designating it as ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion. This is the terminology that we use, Akwamu Mine and Madukai Sifimu, the Akwamu Nation in North America, but we're talking about our traditional Akan religious practice. So you have to be able to distinguish between ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion or what typically passes for Akan tradition today on the continent as well as in the West. One of the number one things, we talked about the influence, negative influence of Christianity and Islam. One of those negative influences is the idiocy of monotheism. Monotheism is the product of the inferior mind of the Caucasian. Monotheism is ignorance, it's foolishness. There's never been a time when there was just one God. That's nonsense. The whites and our offspring are incapable spiritually and racially of being able to communicate with the supreme being. They are spirits of disorder. The difference between us and them is they don't have a kra, a soul of divine consciousness. They are spirits without a kra that's like a body without a brain, like a chicken with its head cut off running amok in a disordered fashion. These are spirits without that divine anchor, the kra. So they're spirits that operate in a discordant fashion. That's how they incarnate. So it's not just based on one thing they do here or there. That's their nature. And it's unchangeable and it's immutable. So that's the difference between us and them. They are incapable of communicating with Inyamewa and Inyame or Amenet and Amen. Because of that, they do not want us to communicate with Inyamewa and Inyame or Amenet and Amen, because when we do that, we attune to divine order. Divine order is Inyamewa, Inyame, Nsheshe. Nsheshe means arrangement or order in the Akan language. It's derived from Sheshe in ancient Kemet, which means plan. Amenet, Amen, Sheshe is the plan or divine arrangement of Amenet and Amen. Inyamewa, Inyame, Nsheshe is the exact same terminology. It's the arrangement in Sheshe of Inyamewa, Inyame, the great mother and great father, that's the divine plan, divine order. The whites and their offspring are not capable of tuning to that, and when we attune to it, divine order again is comprised of Maranechi, divine law, which is the same as love and divine hate. Through law, we accept those things, objects and deeds, and entities that are in harmony with divine order, and through hate, we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities that would otherwise place us in disharmony. So just like your immune system rejects or kills cancerous cells in order to maintain the integrity of your body, that's the divine hate vehicle shrine in your body, divine rejection. The bosom that govern that is Benna and Abedna, or Heru Behuded and Sechima, Sekhmet, Ogun and Iyami Abeni in the Yoruba tradition and so forth. And Ma'at and Ma'at, the male and female part of divine law and divine balance in creation. So when we attune to that, we attune to divine law and divine hate, and we reject the spirits of disorder. We reject the whites and their offspring. So they don't want us to do that because then they can't control us. So they have to teach monotheism. They have to teach that nonsense and make us believe there's one God. And then they're the interpreters of that fictional one God, and then they make the one God white, or the followers and prophets or pseudo-prophets and followers of the one God, white, and so forth. So that's their political move. That's their nonsense. That has nothing to do with us. However, the whites and their offspring have forced that nonsense through Christianity and through Islam into the culture. So now we have Negroes on the continent as well as in the Western Hemisphere talking about the Akan religion is monotheistic. And they'll say Inyame is the monotheistic God. Of course, that's totally inaccurate. Inyame is Amen. Amen from ancient Kemet, also called Amen Ra. Inyamewa is Amenat, or Amenet from ancient Kemet. Amenet is the great mother. Amen is the great father. They've always been from the very beginning. In our Akan culture, you'll find, of course, Inyamewa, Inyame, and we have an article dealing with the origin of the name. So when people get infected with Islam, they write Nyamewa or Amenet totally out of the picture. Or they'll say Nyamewa just means a lesser female deity, like a lesser Abosom, a child of Nyame, which is totally inaccurate. So that infection shows up throughout the culture. Another infection is because of monotheism, they'll say that there are different divinities. They'll say none of those divinities exist. All of them are just different names or titles of the one God. So, for example, they will talk about Nyonkompong and say that's just another name of Nyame. They'll say Tredriampong, that's just another name of Nyame. Oboadie, that's just another name of Nyame. Of course, that's totally false. Nyonkompong is a deity that is subordinate to Nyame. Nyonkompong is called Ra in Asia Kemet, and it's subordinate to Amen. Tredriampong is actually Kopa or Kepra from ancient Kemet, a totally different divinity that's subordinate to Amen and also subordinate to Ra. Odomankoma is actually Atem, or Atem Kopa, Atem Kepra in ancient Kemet. Atem, the deity Atem, another different divinity. Oboade is actually Ptah in ancient Kemet, a different divinity. So Nyame is Amen, the great father. Nyamewa is Amenet, the great mother. That's the supreme being. And the creator and creatress is Ra and Raet. In Akan called the Nyonkompong and the Nyonkontong, two different divinities who are subordinate to the supreme being. And we talked about in the previous webcast the difference between the supreme being and the creator and creatress. The creator and creatress are subordinate to the supreme being, Amenet and Amen, or Nyamewa and Nyame. And then you have Atem, which is Odomankoma. You have Oboade, which is Ptah. You have Tredriampong, which is Kepra, and so forth. These are different divinities in and of themselves. And they're subordinate to Ra or Nyonkompong. They're also subordinate to Nyame, Nyamewa, Amenet, and Amen. So these, all these different deities, they'll say, are all just one name, part of the, you know, just a title or a name of the supreme being. To conflate all these deities together, rip them of their identity, make them non-existent, and say they're just titles because they're trying to force everything under a name, and then once they get the name, they even corrupt that and make that representative of the fake, fictional God of the Bible or the Quran. So these are differences between Akanfo Nanaton, ancient, authentic, Akan, ancestral religion, and the corruption of the ancestral religion. In the corruption of the religion, people, just like the whites and their offspring who are dissexual homosexuals, do not honor and recognize the great divine mother, who's the balance of the great divine father. They write her totally out of creation. So you will hear people talk about Nyame, Nyonkompong, Oboade, Odomankoma, but they won't talk about Nyamewa, Nyonkontong, Sechima, Asaseyafu, Asaseya, and so forth. You won't hear them talk about them in balance, male and female balance. And the same thing happens in ancient Kemet when they only focus on the male divinities and don't focus at all on the female. For example, they talk about Ra, but they don't know anything about Ra'et. They talk about Amen Ra, they'll talk about Amenet Ra'et, and so forth. So this is one of the clear distinctions. And then there are other, and we have articles on these different divinities proving that they're actual deities and what their relationship to Nyamewa and Nyame are. So we go into detail about that in those articles, and we're going to be going through those articles in the upcoming webcast. So we're just giving an overview today. Another distinction with regard to the ancient authentic Akan ancestral religion is the notion of who we call the Akradin Boson, the Abosom that govern the solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern the seven-day week of the Akan people. And, of course, that same seven-day week that we utilize, the Europeans have stolen from our ancient cultures thousands of years ago, and they've been utilizing it ever since, but this is something we've been utilizing for thousands of years. Every day of the week is governed by Abosom that govern the planet or the sun or the moon that governs that day of the week. So, for example, Sunday is Akwesida or Awusida, governed by the sun. Monday is Joada, governed by the moon, Osorane. So Oria is the sun. Osorane is the moon, also called the bosom. Benada or Apenada is Tuesday, governed by the planet. Benna or Apenna, which the white female spring called Mars. Awukuda or Akuada is Wednesday, is governed by the planet. Aku, called Mercury by the white female spring. Thursday is Yauda or Yada or Abada, is governed by the planet. Yao, which they call Jupiter, is also connected to Ya and Abba, which are the planets, Uranus, and Neptune in the European language. Yao, Ya, and Abba, they are both on that govern these different planets. And then you have Afi, Fida, which is Friday, governed by the planet Afi, which is the white female spring called Venus. And then you have Menmenida, which is governed by the Abosom Amenmen. Menmenida is called Saturn, or the white Nile spring, and the planet Saturn is, that's what they call the planet Saturn. We call Ameni or Amenmen. So these 11 Abosom that govern the solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern these 7 days, these male and female Abosom, this is key. Because when we are named, we're given akradein, or soul names, our soul name. When a child is born on a specific day of the week, we're not just named after the day of the week. And, of course, we have an article on each one of these deities that governs the days of the week. We go into detail about them, who they are, their relationship to one another. We show who they are in ancient Kemet. We also show a chart with who they are in the Yoruba tradition and the Vodun tradition as well, just for a comparative analysis. And we also have a video on each one of these deities as well, where we examine the articles we publish on them and go into even more information. Each day of the week, when we're born on a day of the week, we're not just named after the day. So somebody born on Benada, which is the Da or day of Benna, the Abosom that governs the planet Mars. Benna and Abena are the Abosom that govern the planet Benna or Abena Mars. They are called Heru Behudet, or Bedet, or Bedat, which is Bena in Akan, Heru Bedat, or Bedeti, sometimes in ancient Kemet, and Sechima, or Sekhmet, the warrioress goddess, also the great healer, the great divine killer, also governs menstruation, and we have articles on her as well. She's also called Sechima in Akan, but also Abena. So when you're born on Benada or Abenada, your soul name, if you're a male, is Kwabena, is Abena if you're a female. That's because your soul was assigned to the Abosom Bena or the Abosom Abena pre-incarnation. And because your soul was assigned to them and carries their energy and it's attached to you, then that guarantees that you will be born on their day, on the day that their energy is manifest and dominant, which is Benada, the day that their planet governs our planet. So because you are associated with that force of nature pre-incarnation, Benna and Abena make sure that you come into the world on their day as an indication of what happened pre-incarnation. So when a baby is born on Benada, the parents automatically know they were assigned to Nana Benna or Nana Abena by Inyame wa Inyame, and they're given the soul name Kwabena, or the soul name Abena is female, Kwabena is male, and it's the same thing with all the days of the week. That's the name of our Kra, our soul. So it's the Kra Deen, the soul's name. Then we have other names as well. So I'm Kwesi Ra Nehempata Khan. My name is Ra Nehempata Khan. Kwesi is my soul's name because I was born on the day of Awusi or Asi Asar, which is Sunday on the male side. So it's Kwa Si or Kwa Awusi or Kwa Yisi or Kwesi, named after that divinity because my soul, that deity that dwells in my head region, is a servant or a subject of Yabosom Awusi. So he's named after that. That's my soul. and I can call myself Kwesi because my soul's name is Kwesi. If you were born on Ben Adah and your soul is connected or came through the Abosom Ben Adah, then your soul's name is Kwa Ben Adah. And that deity, Kwa Ben Adah, dwells in your head region, and people can call you Kwa Ben Adah because you're named after that divinity as well. So that's the soul's name. The difference in ancient, authentic Akan ancestor religion is we not only understand who these forces in nature are, we invoke them, we understand that ancestor religious practice revolves around the Akra and the identity of the Akra. Just like your physical brain has all the programs necessary to regulate everything in your body, your spirit brain, which is an entity that dwells in the head region spiritually, encoded within it is your specific function executing the world and everything you need to do to harmonize your thoughts, intentions, and actions throughout your life with divine order. It's all encoded within that. And when we seek to know things and we meditate or we think or contemplate things, we're trying to attune to that force in our head region that has that information so we can align our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order so we can live in a harmonious fashion and serve Nyamewa Nyame, Nanasom, serve Nyamewa Nyame as the cells in the divine body that we are. Just like every cell in your body serves a specific function, supports that organ or organ system to serve you, we ourselves in the great divine body of the supreme being is Apurakani Apurakaini people, and only Apurakani Apurakaini people, and we are to execute a specific function. So all of that is encoded within the Akra, and when the Akra has a specific divinity, energy that governs it, like Bena or Afi or whatever, then we're named after them. The soul is named after them. The soul is connected to us, so we carry that name as well. We honor these specific divinities. We know what their functions are. We understand the fact that the entire spiritual tradition revolves around that. So that's key in our practice. We have a shrine established for our Kra and for the Kra Dim Bosom. We're going to get into that in shows coming up, but that's a key distinction with ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion. Many individuals who deal with, well, consider themselves Akan or dealing with that have rejected the notion of who the Kra Dim Bosom are, or even if they understand them to a certain extent, which many do not, and don't even know they exist, and they say, I'm in the Akan religion. You can't understand the tradition at all if you don't know who the Kra Dim Bosom are, because the whole tradition revolves around what's in your Kra. Every thought, intention, and action must comport with what's in your Kra. So if you can't attune to that, then you don't have a tradition. And then you're relegated to just doing little rituals for discarnate, deceased spirits, passing them off as deities and doing little magical things and getting some things that you want or getting some favors for some little spirits and calling that Akan religion, which it is not. Our religion is about harmonizing our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order every step of the way. So that's another distinction, knowing who these divinities are and how to harmonize with them. Another distinction is with regard to identity, understanding what Abusia we are born through, what Matri clan we are born through, the Abosom that govern the Matri clan, and then also what Patri clan we are connected to and the Abosom that govern the Patri clan. Now, on one hand, people understand that there are typically talked about 12 different Patri clans that Akan people are, you're born through one of them from your father's side, and there's a deity that governs that clan. So whether it's the, and it's called Ntoro, Bosom Afram, or Bosom Ayensu, or these different groups, Ntoro groups with a specific deity that governs the group. However, the same is true of the seven great Musia Kuo, or Matri clans in Akan culture. And, of course, that's going to be the subject of an upcoming show. We just want to give this information out. And we go into detail about that in the Okra Complex book. So if you get that book, we go into detail about these various things that we're talking about in summary right now. We just want to show the differences between authentic Akan ancestral religion and the corrupted, infected version that's coming from the continent from numerous individuals as well as people in the Western Hemisphere. There are seven arbosome that govern the seven metric lands. It's not just seven ancestresses. There are seven arbosome. And when we talk about Abrewa Nani and Bao, the old woman and her children, the star system called the old woman and her children, which the white scenario spring called the Pleiades star system, in Akan, it's Abrewa Nani and Bao, the old woman and her children. In ancient Kemet, and those, they represent the seven metric lands, the matrilineal clans of Akan people. And every Akan person is born through one of those clans. In ancient Kemet, those seven stars are called the seven Het Heru. Sometimes they're shown as seven cows. Sometimes they're shown as seven forms of the goddess Het Heru, the Ntorot, or divinity Het Heru. Those seven females are the same seven divinities, the seven Het Heru, the seven divinities that govern the seven matric clans. So the seven ancestresses that every Akan person is descended from one of them that governs these seven major clans in Akan culture, the Asona clan, Algona clan, Ekawana clan, Adriana, Asinie, Ritual, Asachiri, and it, also there are other groups that are associated. So you have Oyoko, and you have different subgroups of Abradie and different clans. But the seven major clans are connected to the old woman and her children constellation. There are seven goddesses, seven divinities that govern the seven ancestresses who govern those clans. That is another difference that's not taught typically on the continent as well as here in the Western Hemisphere. We go into this information and we can actually prove it through the culture, the ancient Akani culture from ancient Kemet, because it's the same language. You find the same deities with the same names that they have in ancient Kemet and Kanat, as well as they have in Akan culture. So in our publications, we prove that information. The number one proof, of course, comes through direct experience with these Abosom, direct experience with the Kra, direct experience with the Nananoma and Samapo, who will communicate with you, show you your language, confirm for you who you are, and give you that detailed information. The Abosom that were born with you, that we have carried transcarnationally through the enslavement era and forward, they will communicate. They have already done that. They will show you who you are, and they will prove it, and they will confirm it. So we're talking about direct experience where we get the information from, but, of course, the most extensive record of ancestral religion published anywhere of any real religion or even all the fake religions are the records of ancient Kemet. And they lay out the cosmology. Our ancestresses and ancestors laid out the cosmology in detail in thousands of inscriptions. So when you get an Akan dictionary and a hieroglyphic dictionary, you find the same words, same concepts, same deities, same multi-tiered, multi-faceted, multi-layered concepts intact. And then you have the fullness of the cosmology that we can draw on, that we can use as a measure against what's being taught now. We can show that textually from ancient Kemet and ritually and so forth, but then we also have the direct experience with our Abosom, with Adebisa, with divination, with the Nananom and Samapo, and so forth, so we can confirm it in numerous ways. And the only way you can have an authentic practice again and an authentic expression of ancestral religion is through that direct experience. But the confirmation can also be given supplementally through what our ancestresses and ancestors laid down for us in our ancient culture. That's one of the reasons they did that, was to establish and lay out and carve in stone and on papyri, painted and so forth, the cosmology so we can understand and so that we can remember, so that we can recall. So these are major the major aspects of our identity, the Kra, the soul, the divine consciousness, and the deity that governs the Kra named Bosom. We deal with all 11 of them. We have articles on each one of them, 11 articles. We have 11 videos dealing with each one of them in detail. Then on the Patriclan side, the Patrilineal side, the Patricircle side, we have the 12 N'Toro, the 12 divinities that govern those 12 patri clans in our Khan culture, who those divinities are. That's like your spiritual DNA from the father, and then the spiritual DNA from the mother, like the Musia, Kuo, the ancestral clans, the matri clans. But those seven clans are not just seven ancestresses governed by seven ancestresses, as they say on the continent and in the West, but they're also governed by seven female divinities. And we need to know who those divinities are, because your spiritual DNA from the mother's side, spiritual DNA from the father's side, combined to support what's encoded within your kra, is like a triangle. The right and left bottom corners is the spiritual DNA from the father's side and the mother's side, and then the apex is the kra. And that triangle, that ahinasa, that encapsulates your identity. If you don't understand the divinities that govern the kra, the patra circle, and the matra circle, which combine to make you up, then you don't understand who you are, and then you can be taken advantage of when you interface with people who claim to be initiated, people who claim to be spiritualists, people who claim to know this and claim to know that. Our culture is inherent, it's inborn, it's intrinsic, and we're going to begin to get into a great deal of detail in every forthcoming show. So we want to introduce Akanpo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion, in this first piece. And then next week, we're going to start getting into who these Akan Abosom actually are. We're going to get into also ancestral religious practice. And we also will be dealing with people who are forming study groups wherever they are in the country and outside of the country, and how to establish those Akanpo Nanasom study groups and so forth. You can also connect with us on our Ning site. We have a Ning network on the Ning platform, a social network on the Ning platform, apuraka-apurayetkaet.ning.com. You can join it, create a profile, engage in the discussions on the discussion forums and blogs and videos and so forth. It's been up for a few years. We have hundreds of members, people around the world, people who are studying this information, incorporating this information into their lives, turning their lives around, purifying themselves, you know, changing their diets, getting rid of, you know, negative habits, whether it's drug addiction, different things. Of course, our ancestral religious practices and culture has the answer to overcome all these different things. We don't have to look outside of our culture to heal ourselves. So people are transforming their own lives physically, spiritually, and then connecting with those in their family and those who they're connected with, and reordering their lives based on their ancestral religious tradition. So you can get on that forum. You can connect with other people who are of like mind. We're also on Facebook, apuraka.apuraikaet, so you can connect with us there. We always update, and we will be back on tomorrow. For Ojida, and we're going to send out a notification for that. And then, of course, the following day is Egua Marketplace Day, and we will have a show on that day as well. So every Joada, Benada, and Awukuda, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we have Akanpo Nanasom, the new show, Ojida, and then Egua Marketplace Day. So that's going to be a weekly thing. Again, go to the website. Purchase the book, support our efforts. Every time you purchase a book, it helps us to continue publishing, giving away free books, giving free seminars and so forth, presentations, and, you know, helping to transform lives of not only Akanpo, but also Afurakani, Afurakani people, wherever we are in the world. So, Yedase, we thank you for tuning in, and we will be back on tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Ojida. Yeah, sir.